Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Beauty and the Brain, the podcast where we discuss all things aesthetics. I'm your co-host, Dr. Chris Crowley.
And I'm Jerry Drinkard, family nurse practitioner. And together, Chris and I own Skin and Tonic, located here in Pace, Florida. I'm a little bit stumbling on my words just because of...
I just threw a topic on him.
The topic that we're going to be talking about. And thankfully, we're joined by a hoo-ha expert, Allie. She's a nurse practitioner here in the clinic with us, and we're going to be talking about Virginias.
Not only does she have one, she treats them all the time.
I do. Very familiar, thankfully.
So for all of you that are confused out there, our topic today is, can your vagina sweat?
Totally.
She's like, yes. Interesting topic. So I don't know how we got this one in our lineup list, but obviously someone has asked questions about this. It's something that comes on topics. We actually have a fair amount of vagina topics today.
I have a feeling that this...
It's kind of a theme.
If this topic was prompted by a question, I just have a feeling that Donna Taylor asked this question. I think she would do this just to jack with us.
So Donna, I don't know if you asked this question or if you're just messing with Jerry, but you've got him in a sweat right now having to talk about vagina sweat.
Yeah.
We're obviously, we can talk about a number of things on the podcast. So when you look at our topic history, we've had, you know, well over more than 150 episodes now, I think. And so we've talked about a range of things, but I believe this is a first. So I don't remember talking about this at all before, but we do lots of things about sexual health. So both for men and women.
And we talk about real problems, and this apparently is a real issue.
I think in general, when we talk about parts of the body that sweat, it's not a commonly asked question, but we are asked about like breast sweat, armpit sweat, sweaty palms, sweaty feet. And we do have a lot of treatments that we can do for that. So, you know, here at Skin and Tonic, we focus mostly on injectables. So we'll do neurotoxin or some form of Botox or something similar to that to stop sweating in those areas. But there are lasers and devices. We have radio frequency devices, ultrasound. All those things have been used to try to decrease sweating in areas that people don't really want it. It causes, you know, maybe sometimes discomfort. Sometimes people are worried, like aesthetically. So if people are sweating through their shirts and they're having armpit sweat, we can stop that. So I guess it's like any other area. It could have sweat in the groin region. I don't think you have sweat glands.
It's not the actual vagina. It's the area around the vulva and like the groin area. So it's like, it's one of those things like we talk about Virginia sweat, but it's really kind of like swamp ass in a guy.
Ball sweat, if you want to say that.
This topic, it just sounds better and better the more we talk. I don't know what sounds better, swamp ass or ball sweat. I think I want a t-shirt that says that.
But it is an actual medical condition, and it's called hyperhidrosis is the actual medical condition of excessive sweating. And it says it's linked to about 4.8% of the U.S. population. I kind of thought it would be a little higher than that, or maybe that's just like the extra extreme cases. I'll never forget my mom told me one time she was teaching, back when she was still working and she was teaching, that she had like gone over to help a student, and she taught fifth grade, and she touched her hand and she was like, baby, what is wrong with your hand? Like, why are your hands so wet? And she's like, I have a medical condition. And she was like, I felt so bad. She was like, but it felt like she had dunked her hands in like a bucket of water. They were so wet. And so she had severe palm sweating. But 4.8% that have hyperhidrosis in the US say they have excessive sweating also in their groin area. Which I would assume, because it's a very closed up space most of the time.
And you wear garments over it usually, so clothing of some sort.
Usually.
You just need like some breathable clothing. I mean, that's one of the things to...
Can you use deodorant there?
Yeah.
They actually make deodorant safe for that area now.
Yeah, because the thing is you need like something that's not going to change the pH, because you get the pH of one of those off.
One of those.
I mean, that's a real problem.
It can be, yeah.
They even have like specific washes. You can't just wash them with like normal soap, because like one of the popular ones, I just love the name, is called the Honey Pot. I've used it. It's like a Honey Pot vaginal wash, but it actually helps to decrease sweating and preserve the pH. And so the thing about it is like you have different skin types and you use different products, and so you use different products in that area.
They even have feminine deodorant spray, and it's to help manage sweat, reduce friction, and neutralize odor without disrupting your natural pH. And you can spray it like we would, all of my friends in college used this. Like before you like went out at night and it was like hot outside, like you know you're gonna be sweating. Like there's just no way around it. We wouldn't want to like spray it like actually on ourselves because that just felt really invasive. And so we would just like spray it in our underwear, like before you put your underwear on, and it would help you feel like super fresh.
But are you super fresh or is that kind of like dry shampoo?
I mean, I think it's like, it's a deodorant. So it's like the same thing as like putting deodorant on your armpit.
It's not really making your hair clean, is it?
It's absorbing like oils, I guess. I mean, it does help. It's cleaner than without.
It's better. Like, I mean.
But it really, it helps to like almost make you feel like cooler down there too.
Kind of like a talc powder.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've used,
let's not get into talk.
Oh, you know I can talk about some talc powder. We'll have to get back to that episode, man.
This is talc free though. This spray.
So then literally if somebody's having this problem, what are some things that they can do at home? We had to research this topic. This is not something that comes up often. Obviously, if they're here to see us for it, we have medical things that we can do. And so we can certainly talk about that. But let's say they're not at that stage, but they're having some issues. What are things they can do at home to help manage this?
Breathable garments, for one. Like, I think that's important. Like, hygiene, for one. Like, grooming.
So I think it's important to for them to recognize the difference. Because I don't know. I don't have one. But I think, like, if it's wet and or moist in that area, it's sometimes hard maybe to distinguish from when I was researching this. Is it vaginal discharge? Is it urinary leakage? Really? Is it sweat? Are they having, like, stress incontinence?
Right.
And so it's important for them to make sure they don't have a medical, like another medical problem, identify what it's coming from. If it's just sweating, again, there's some simple things to kind of start doing as long as it's not hyperhidrosis. So the breathable clothing, changing out of wet clothing as soon as possible, trying some of the things that are approved for that area, you know, being aware that some of that may cause sensitivity issues. And then if they come to us, what would you do? Allie, you're the vagina expert.
I don't know. Did you put Botox around there?
Yeah, we could literally put Botox anywhere that it's sweating. Yeah. So you do it in breast sweat, armpits, palms. So it's an off-label use. It's not an approved use in that area, but the mechanism is the same. So we could use a starch iodine test, which is basically where we can put some cornstarch and iodine and identify the areas of the most active sweat glands. And we would just inject a small amount of neurotoxin throughout that area that we really see the active sweat glands. And it will probably last like 6 to 9 months, depending on the dose and how much of an area we have to spread it over. But it lasts a lot longer than Botox that we're using in other areas.
Well, you're not stopping the muscle movement. So, I mean, I think that's one of those things that people don't think about. Like, I don't think they think about using like neurotoxin, Botox, Dysport, whatever you want to talk about, like in areas like that. Most people think about it just for muscle relaxation, for decreased wrinkles. But it does have medical uses like that. What else do you have to tell us about?
Sounded like you bleeped out vagina when you said that. No, I think, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, it's a normal thing. Like, we all sweat. We all sweat in areas. Just because you're a girl and you have vagina sweat doesn't make it more gross. Like, boys sweat in their groin areas, too.
Yeah, and we can use Botox to treat all those areas. But let's, like, with, I think it's also important to understand, because Jerry mentioned it, it's not going to be used to treat a muscle, but it's basically still stopping acetylcholine release, which is going to decrease our sweat gland activity, which therefore decreases the amount of sweat that we'll produce. And so there are certain amounts that we would need, probably be concerned if we got to certain doses, but we can inject large amounts of Botox without problem. So when we look like body-wide, we can inject hundreds of units at one time. So we certainly can treat the entire groin area at once if somebody's having, guys or girls, but since we're talking about, you know, girls in this episode, it, certainly if they're having a sweating issue, it can be treated with that. We can do some other things here because Jerry had started talking briefly about maybe some grooming. And so if there's a lot of hair there, it's the sweating. Maybe it's a problem if it's like staining on their clothing or they're showing soak through on the clothing. But also then there's sometimes odors associated with that, especially if there's a lot of hair to trap that and hold it close there. And so we can do things here like laser hair removal. So you do quite a bit of that.
Tons. And Brazilian's probably like one of the most common treatments that I do with laser hair removal. And yeah, I definitely think that would help with reducing the heat in that area, right? Taking a layer off.
Is it painful?
We have our cooler device.
It has a cooling handpiece.
Yeah, I was going to say our handpiece alone is cooling. And so I can tell you my patients tell me that it's way more comfortable than waxing when they've been told the opposite possibly in the past, that waxing is easier than laser hair removal. And I also do it for a lot of ingrown hairs too, because that management, it can be really hard and shaving can irritate that. And then I've even had some clients that had gone to waxing to help with the ingrown hairs, and then that in fact made it worse. And so just keeping, and I mean, ingrown hairs, it can be another infection risk, especially if you're sweating and you have all that going on down there. So I think, you know, if you can just get rid of all of that hair anyway, it's just gonna decrease the heat and also probably decrease your risk for infection later on with like ingrown hairs and sweating. And
yeah, I don't know that I would promote it for that. It might if you have ingrown, if you have recurrent ingrown hairs possibly, but certainly the friction, the sweat, and especially if they're dealing with like odor issues because it's trapping the sweat there. How many treatments do we usually need for that area?
Anywhere from 6 to 10. It really depends on the person and how many hair cycles they have. We do it like every 4 weeks and then have them come back as needed. You want to have a little stubble there, but you certainly don't want days and days of growth because the laser is attracted to the pigment. And if there's a ton of pigment there because the hairs are longer, it's going to be a lot hotter and more uncomfortable of a procedure. But most people do really well with, I would say, like 6 to 8 treatments usually, and then need about one to two a year for touch-ups.
Yeah, certainly there's no device approved in this area for sweating. There are some devices out there that have sweating indications. And there are devices we can use off-label to try to use like a heat energy or radio frequency type energy. So something like a radio frequency microneedling, we could use that off-label to try to decrease the sweat gland activity in that area. So definitely we can keep escalating that. When we look at like skin barrier issues, it's sometimes a skin issue because of the amount of sweat. So if they have a lot of friction, a lot of sweat there, I think that's the other reason that sometimes the hair removal procedures will lead to less skin irritation because mm-hmm. they're not keeping all of that up against their skin and they're not having to shave as much or groom as much if that's what they've been doing. And so we can offer a more longer term solution. So we never say it's permanent. It's a permanent hair reduction. And so you'll see less of it, but it doesn't always take it 100% away.
I think that's a lot of times people think that laser hair removal is a, you know, do a couple of treatments and you're done. And it is, it's like anything else, basically, like it does require some maintenance, but it's well worth it as well. So
I think it's part of the thing that you know, we don't talk about, I think, as much in our day-to-day as we do on the podcast. It seems like we have a disproportionate amount of sexual health topics that we talk about here compared to what we see in day-to-day. But we still see a fair amount that when we talk about intimate wellness in any way, whether it's sexual performance, like sexual aesthetics, or some of these more like just, I would say, functional day-to-day issues that everybody deals with to some degree, once you start having those conversations, you realize that it's more common than you think. And so I think that's why we like to bring these topics up on the podcast and talk about it, because some people find it embarrassing or shameful, or I shouldn't really worry about that, but they're going home and they're struggling with it anyway. It's bothering them. And once you start opening up those conversations and let people talk to you about it, we have so many treatment options that are really effective for these, a lot of things in the intimate area.
Well, we do laugh and joke about it because it is kind of funny, but just like we laugh and joke about Swamp Ass, but it's one of those things like we joke about it, but it's real.
Yeah.
And I assure anybody that's listening to this, if you come in, like, we're not going to like laugh at you. We may laugh while we talk about it and laugh with you, but it's truly a problem. I think at Skin and Tonic, we are pretty much open books and willing to discuss and treat anything that comes by. So even though we're silly and we laugh and we cut up and we have a good time, it's also something we take very serious if it's something that's impacting somebody's quality of life.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is with this whole topic, like just also that to anybody out there listening, to be clear, we're not talking about vaginal discharge or moistness or wetness or anything coming from the vagina. We're talking about sweat in the vaginal region, and mm-hmm. people refer to it as vagina sweat. So we mentioned that earlier, but I also want to be clear about that. We would send you in for some sort of medical evaluation if you have an abnormal discharge. We're not taking care of that. Most aesthetic practices are not. So we're doing more, you know, if it's something like stress incontinence and leaking urine, then yeah, we have some lasers and we have PRP and things we can address with that. But in general, today we're talking about vagina sweat.
And it is a different type of sweat gland. So the sweat's like different in that area. A lot of times it's more of like a milky consistency. It's called eccrine gland, E-C-C-R-I-N-E.
And that's different than the...
Yeah, the sweat glands, they're two different types of sweat glands. And the sweat that happens in the vulva area has a milk-like texture and it can have a strong odor.
Cruel that we're built that way. We already have, like, you can have milky discharge. Yeah. And then our sweat's going to look this. That's crazy.
Just there.
I didn't know that.
And so I actually cheated. I had to double check this because it's been a long time since I looked at sweat glands. But, you know, as you just mentioned, there are different types of sweat glands. There's eccrine, apocrine, sebaceous. And the eccrine, I think, is the more clear, watery. The apocrine is the one that's thicker. It has more odor associated. So armpits, vulva. And so we have all of them in different parts of our body. None of these are necessarily inside the vagina, they're around that region, but there is different types of sweat glands there for sure. The interesting thing or the good thing is our neurotoxin will work on any of this. We have the acetylcholine release, the mechanism is the same. So all the treatments we discuss will work the same in that area. So if you're having any of those issues, come and see us here. It's getting a tonic or check out one of your, talk to one of your medical aesthetic providers near you. We hope to see you soon on another episode of Beauty in the Brain.
See you soon.
Bye.